So I'll try to combine two of the requested topics from before. We had many of them. So I mentioned to some of you, Matzei Shabbos, I think Rabbi Shabbatai is putting together Malava Malka, whereby we'll have an open discussion, somewhat of a question answer, not in halacha, you can if you want, but more in hashkafa and ideas. So for now, I decided, based on two of the requests, to speak a little bit about chinuch habanim, and chinuch in being machanech, a little bit. And someone asked me also about my actuarial background, so I'll share a little bit about that, how I went into chinuch, and we'll combine the two, and hopefully you'll get some inspiration from this. So one of the biggest mistakes young bachim, or even when they're married, make when they're learning, is that they want to continue to learn. And that's not a mistake, that's a good thing. The mistake is that they think going into chinuch is a continuation of learning. And that oftentimes is not the case. Chinuch is a job just like any other job. Difference might be, maybe you'll still be wearing white shirts or ties and suits as opposed to another job. You'll be teaching Torah, but it's not going to be like sitting in the base medrash. You're not going to be able to just walk into shir and leave. There's preparation, there's creativity, there's now having to use smart boards and learning how a computer works and showing videos because that's what they need these days. It certainly wasn't that way when I was growing up, but this is a different generation. So it's not like sitting in the base medrash all day long, it's just learning for 3, 6, 9, 12 hours. Yes, you're in the base medrash teaching, but it's not a way, if you're not passionate about teaching, then you should not go into chinuch. Just because you're passionate about learning doesn't translate to being a mechanech. Now, okay, if you want to, you don't want to go work. You're afraid to go work. You're afraid to make money. You're afraid to go to the work in the city. So you go to chinuch to avoid that. In life, never do you want to do something because you're running away from something. To avoid going to work, so you stay in the base medrash, you stay in the chinuch. If you want to learn, so that learn because you want to learn. You want to be a mechanech because you want to be a mechanech. But if you want to just teach to avoid having to work, that's never a good thing. Not only in work and learning, in anything you do in life. You know, you're going to move to a certain community because you hate the current community you're in, so you're just running away from that one. It's not going to help you to go to another community unless you're excited about going there. So all your decisions in life should always be not where you're running from, but what you're running to, what you're chasing after, something you're passionate about. So for me, so my story is not trying to inspire you to be mechanchim per se. My story about being an actuary and leaving the field was that I, as younger, I was always a math student. You know, Rabbi Mirzoff mentioned he got a 1050 on the SATs. I did not get a 1050 on the SATs. So I did well in math, okay? So they always said, oh, you got to be an actuary. I don't know what an actuary is. You probably don't know what an actuary is. Okay, everyone said, oh, you should be an actuary. You're good at math. You should be an actuary. Okay, so I went to college and I majored in math. And I'll tell you this. I mean, I actually wanted to major. I did want to major in business originally. But then I found out that as part of the business course, you have to do a public speaking class. So I'm like, oh, boy, I'm going to jump ship. And I majored in math instead. I didn't speak in my own ufruf. I was so scared to get up to speak in front of people. So I switched to a major in math and minored in business. And my wife, she was working as an accountant in one of the big four firms, PricewaterhouseCoopers. So she was really, you know, good in school. She was like the top of her class in the accounting department. So she got a job out of there. And then I did okay in college. No one ever told me when you major in math. Any majors, math majors here? Okay, yeah, okay. So there's a certain point in math majors where there are no more numbers. Doesn't make any sense. Numbers just stop. Like I only know how to add and subtract and all the other fancy things with numbers. I don't know how to do math without numbers. So it gets to a point where it's just all theory, and I was like, oh, this is dreadful. I was like so deep in, I couldn't turn back anymore, so I just finished off the math major just passing with barely passing. So as I majored in math, and then my wife got me a summer internship at the same place. She was working at PricewaterhouseCoopers in the actuarial department. So I worked there for a summer. They offered me a full-time job the next year. I deferred it and worked for another summer. And then finally, I couldn't defer anymore, so I worked full-time starting in September 2005. 3, I think it was. And then I retired the next September. So I worked for Folia. I gave it a real chance. And for me, I was always running home to learn more, and my learning wasn't as strong as I wanted to be. I learned every night, but after a full day of work, so my mind was really burnt, it was fried. So I learned. We were learning Zvachim that year. Maybe not the best thing to learn when you're working. Certainly the first year working, but I was learning Zvachim that year. And I had not learned Baba Kama. I remember, like, how do I go on without learning Baba Kama? So I really had a passion for learning. But I also had, at the time, I had 2 kids. I had an apartment in Queens. So I remember when I told my parents. So my father said one of the most amazing things to me. He said, listen, you have to be happy with whatever you're doing. So although it meant that he's going to have to support me a little bit to help me go through, I had to go back to college at YU and then to finish Shmicha. So he said, listen, you have to be happy with what you're doing. And I wasn't happy. That's what meant the most to him. My mother wasn't as happy. My in-laws were certainly not as happy. I remember even this summer when I told them, so they were at my house. It was 9 days. I made a seim on Kedushin in the 9 days in my parents' house in Teaneck, and they came. So they're telling me, I had a friend of mine, still a friend of mine, Rabbi Malitsky. So Rabbi Malitsky, so he's a great guy, Rabbi in TBC, now Rabbi in JC, he's an assistant rabbi in Edison. So he at the time was like working really hard, he was like selling hot dogs at hockey camps and stuff he was doing. So my mother-in-law was like, you got to do what Sariel does, Rabbi Malitsky, what he does, you got to like start selling hot dogs and make some money in the summer. So to this day I still say, I call her Mud instead of Mom, Mother. So I say, I still have yet to sell one hot dog in my life. So that's my response to her. So for me, my passion was learning. It wasn't really even teaching at that point. But it certainly wasn't to be an actuary. So the first thing is, if you're not passionate about teaching in chinuch or any other job you want to pursue, then don't do it. Because everyone here has a neshama and is brought to this world for a reason to accomplish something. So find your passion. Now, it's not easy. We spend our whole life finding our passion. At one point I wanted to be an engineer, and I like to draw also. So I was going to be an architect at some point. And there's so many different changes, and finally I ended up here for some reason. So as long as you're looking for your passion, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to send you on that right path. Now, those who do go into chinuch, and when you all become parents, Amir Tashem, you have to mechanich your children like we discussed this morning. So there are really just 2 basic elements when it comes to chinuch. Always keep this in mind. There's the teaching, and then there's the relationship. And, over time, that changes with generations. Like when I was growing up, I had very, very little relationships with my rebbeim. It was all about teaching. It didn't exist. You had a relationship, but it wasn't like, there's one rebbe who was really special, but they're all special, but we didn't need it so much growing up, or I didn't need it. Nowadays, the generation you guys live in, the relationship to their Rebbeim, or now from my perspective and maybe yours, when you become a Rebbe, that relationship is more important than the teaching. Over time, that ratio changes significantly more. In high school, the relationship is much more than the teaching. Now, I'm not saying don't teach Chas V'Shalom. You have to teach and relationship. But if your only goal is simply to teach, and not to talk to the Talmidim, not to hang out with the Talmidim, not to take them for a Thursday night cholent or a trip to a baseball game or whatever you're teaching. Same thing with your kids. If you're only there to teach them and have them go to school and do homework, you're not doing your job. You have to build that relationship with them. And as I said, that relationship is more important than the teaching, certainly in this generation. So just to highlight, the rest is going to be just some stories about we see how great people, how the mechanech, students and children with relationships, and how it's impacted them. Rav Ari Levine, and this is in the previous generation already, Rav Ari Levine, he was such a tzaddik, so there's a person, a boy in his neighborhood, who after he became bar mitzvah, slowly it was clear that he was going off the derech. Firstly, his tzitzis started being tucked in, and then no tzitzis, and then no yarmulke eventually. And everyone, no matter how far you were from, Yiddishkeit, you can't not love Rav Ari Levine. So this boy loved Rav Ari Levine, but he had bushi. He was embarrassed to see Rav Ari Levine. So anytime he saw Rav Ari Levine walking in the street, he ran to the other side. He just, avoided Rav Arye Levine as much as he possibly could. And every time Rav Arye Levine saw him, he tried chasing after the boy ran away. One time the boy was turning a corner and there was Rav Arye Levine. He couldn't evade him at that point. And Rav Arye Levine said, Reuven, whatever his name was, I've been looking for you for so long. Where have you been? He said, to be honest, I don't know if you noticed, I stopped wearing tzitzis, I stopped wearing yarmulke. I've been avoiding Rav Arye Levine. And I've been avoiding the Rebbe. So he felt so bad that he was that I was causing him such tsar. He said, you don't understand. Rav Arye Levine says to him, I'm a short man. I don't see what's on top of your head. I see what's inside your heart. That's what it means to be a Rebbe, to build that relationship. There are going to be some Talmidim and some children who want to learn, and you're going to push them to learn and grow, and that you should continue to do. But there are also going to be Talmidim who are not going to be able to learn as much. And even those who do and can, you also have to connect to their heart, to their emotion. Someone also asked me why, about Machshav as well. Maybe we could discuss a little bit Matzah Shabbos. But this is why in this generation, because of so much what's going on, we have to connect so much to the Talmidim, more so in the past. So Machshava, Chassidus, whatever the angle is, the inspiration, the stories, those are so much more necessary than in the past. Someone told me that Rabbi Simon, when I was in yeshiva, so I wasn't in a shir, but he would tell stories every, twice in the shir. As time went on, he needs to tell a story every 10 minutes to keep them from paying attention. Because you guys in this generation, no offense to you, this is how you guys came into the generation. You didn't choose this. But you're so used to screens, and you're so used to commercials, and change, and this, and Times Square, and everything all over the place, so you can't focus for more than 3 minutes. So he has to tell a story every so often to keep them in check. So it's the same thing, they just need a little more love, a little more connection in this generation. Another mice about Rav Arye Levine, he was once sitting in his office with another administrator, I'm sure assistant, manal, or whatever the positions were, and they're looking out the window, the kids playing recess. Rav Arye Levine turns to the guy and says, what do you see outside? He says, I see Reuven's playing on the seesaw and Shimon's going down the slide and these two are having a catch. Rav Arye Levine says, I don't see that. I see Reuven's shoes are starting to tear up. He needs a new pair of shoes. I see Shimon over there, it's a little chilly. He should be wearing long sleeves. And Yosef over there, he was looking at each boy, what they needed. He wasn't just observing them play. What does each person need? What does each boy need? That's the godless of a real Rav, a real mechanech. Now, on a greater scale, I was with someone a couple weeks ago. He's a Talmud of Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, Zatzal. And he, of course, had a yeshiva of 7,000 bachur. And one of the Beit Midrashos are called Beit Shishaya, I think. So a boy comes to Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel and tells him, Rebbe, I so much appreciated when they built Beit Shishaya, and I have a hard time seeing. So in the old Beit Midrash, I couldn't see well. It was very dim. Beit Shishaya, they had these, the lights were so good, it was clear. I was able to read the Gemara well, read the Svarim well. And just the other day, they came in, they changed the lights. Now they're a little dim. It's hard for me to see at this point. So Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel says, where do you sit? So he tells him where he sits. 2 days later, a bunch of guys come in, a big ladder right above this guy's seat, and puts in a special light just for this bacher. Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel had 7,000 talmidim. 7,000. He could have said, okay, all right. I can't worry about every single person. But he did worry about every single person. To be mechanech and not just to teach, a shir and 20 people and walk out, is to build connections. Whether you're a Talmud or whether you're a Rebbe, you have to build that connection. Rapam's very last drasha he gave, public drasha he gave, was the following. We're familiar with the Rashi and Chumash quotes from the Chazal, that when Klal Yisrael entered into Eretz Yisrael, so on occasion they would find a neged tzaras, a white blotch on their house, on the wall, and they'd remove it, and they'd find some hidden treasure that were left by the goyim before them. So Rav Palm tried to develop this. Imagine. Now, it doesn't say that they walked in and saw Negatras immediately. They could have been there for 25 years in this house in Eretz Yisrael. And then suddenly they had a white taras. They called in the Kohen. The Kohen declared it taras. Opened up the wall, and there they found gold and silver. So now imagine, Rapam says, this guy could have been living a very simple, poor life. Little did he know that he was sitting on top of a treasure for the past 25 years. Imagine, like, had I known about this 25 years ago? But there's a hidden treasure that he found. So Rapam said, that's the obligation of every single mechanech and every single parent, that each of your children, each of your talmidim who are like children, has a hidden treasure. And they're sitting on top of that, they have that enclosed within them, and your obligation as a mechanech, as a rebbe, as a parent, to uncover that treasure, to find that treasure for them so they could succeed. Because they have a unique treasure that no one else has. There's a maisa about, there's a shul in Krakow called Rav Isaacal Shul. And the story goes, it's a wild story similar to, I told you the story about the Marshal? So it's almost as wild as that, but not as scary. It's not scary. So this guy, Isaacal, Rav Isaacal, had a dream. He lived in Krakow. And he had a dream that there was a bridge in Prague. And underneath this bridge in Prague, there was a hidden treasure. Okay, it's a dream. The next night, he had the same exact dream. And the next night, and the next night. And he finally says, I can't just ignore the dream. It's obviously a message. So he tells his wife he's going to follow his dreams. And his wife's like, okay, you're crazy, but okay, do what you want. So he gets on the next train, goes to Prague. And miraculously, that same exact bridge he saw in his house, in his dream rather, was there. He found the bridge. And he was ready to run over, start digging up underneath the bridge, but there were soldiers surrounding this bridge. So he couldn't get any closer. So he just stood there and fantasized, what if there was a treasure there? What would I do with that money? And he just sat there till the sun set and went back to an inn. Next morning comes back, and again, soldiers around that bridge for whatever reason, and he's just staring, like wondering what would be if that's actually a treasure underneath there. So a soldier comes over to this guy and says, excuse me, sir, can I help you out? I saw you here for 2 days just staring under the bridge. Is there something you're looking for? So he says, well, to be honest, I had a dream about, and before he could even finish, he says, I had a dream also. I don't listen to my dreams. You want to know what my dream is? I had a dream that there's this guy, Isaacal, who lives in Krakow, and underneath his oven, there's a treasure. You think I'm going to go to Krakow and find some guy, Isaacal? So Isaacal says, thank you so much, gets on the next train, goes to his house in Krakow, moves over the oven, uncovers a treasure, and supposedly he built this shul, Rav Isaacal shul in Krakow, with that treasure he found. And of course, the lesson is that every single person has a treasure hidden beneath to accomplish great things. In Five Towns in DRS, Rav Yisrael Kamenetsky is the Menahel, Rosh Yeshiva, and he shared this story with me a few months ago. So his father, Rav David Kamenetsky Zatzal, was my neighbor, my parents' neighbor. They live next door with each other. When he was nifter 2 years ago, my father, who's a doctor, was present at the time, assisting. So he shared the following maisa. After his father passed away, Rav Yisrael's father passed away, so we got a call from someone who wants to remain nameless, who is, you know, his mission in life is just to buy Sefer Torah and to dedicate them. So he told Rav Yisrael Kamenetsky, I want to have a Sefer Torah written in memory of your father, Rav David Kamenetsky Zatzal. So he said, that's lovely, but why? Like, what's your shaychus to my father? So this successful individual explained to him that when he was in camp, so Rav David Kamenetsky Zatzal was the head of camp in Maginav rather. And this successful person at the time was a young boy, and he wasn't matzliach in camp. He just wasn't having a good time. He couldn't find his strength. So one day, Rav David Kamenetsky says to him, listen, you're going to be the head of canteen. And canteen was a very chashuv job to be in charge of. He controlled the food. He ate what he wanted. He gave what he wanted. And at that time, he said to himself, someone actually believes in me. Someone found a koach of mine. I could be in charge of something. I could do something. And that put me on a path to success. So everything I've accomplished in this world of all the Sefer Torah that I've dedicated was thanks to one Rebbe, one Mechanich, figuring out my strengths, my goals, my abilities in this world. There's a story about a 17-year-old boy who was very ill with cancer. He's in the hospital room. His father's by his bed. He tells his father that he wants to discuss his own levaya. And the father says, "We're not discussing your levaya. You're going to make it. You can do it. You're going to make it." And the boy insists. And so the father couldn't stop him. So he said that, "I want only one hesped in my levaya." He said, "I want my fifth grade Rebbe." So the father was confused because he was a very good learner in yeshiva, Rebbe in high school maybe. Why dafka the fifth grade Rebbe? So he asked his son, "Why do you choose him to be the one to eulogize you?" So he tells his father, "If you go over to the nightstand in the hospital room, I have a wallet. You open up the wallet, take out a piece of paper." So he goes in the wallet, unfolds a piece of paper, and it says like a list of names. And then it says like Reuven, funny. Shimon, smart. And he said this was, our Rebbe had us do a little exercise in class. That everyone goes around the room. If they write about each person, a midah that you think is special about that person. And then he handed it to us, that Reuven thinks I'm funny. Shimon thinks I'm smart. And he said, whenever I always doubted myself. I didn't think I had any kochos in this world. But when I saw my peers, realized that I'm funny, I'm smart, I'm athletic. And every time in life when I was down about myself, I took out that letter, I opened up and read, well, Reuven thinks I'm funny, Shimon thinks I'm smart. And went down the list to build me confidence. That's a true Rebbe. So the boy unfortunately died shortly thereafter, and the fifth grade Rebbe was masped him, and it was time for a shiva call. So the fifth grade Rebbe is paying a shiva call, Menachem Avil, to the parents, the family, and it happens to be there are a few other members of that fifth grade class that were present at the time. So the fifth grade Rebbe says, you know, he's Menachem Avil, he's talking to the parents, he says, "Let me ask you a question. Why was I chosen of all the people to be masped your son?" So the father explained, "Because of this exercise, this piece of paper that you had them do, gave him great confidence." And when the father explained this, all the other classmates that were there took out their wallets and took out their papers, what gave them great confidence. So a mechanich is there to build up each student, and a parent is there to build up each child. Yes, you have to put them straight and put them in the right path, but to find each person's koach, each person's passion. It's not only about teaching. It's very much about teaching, but also, if not more important, depending on the age and the stage, to bring about the best of each student. So I'll finish off with one last story. I didn't tell you about the Camp Cayley, so I can't remember who I told what story. Camp Cayley story? Ring a bell? No? Okay, good. So Camp Cayley happened a few years ago. It was in the news that there was a van going from Cleveland. And there was as the driver was driving, some smoke was coming out of the hood of the van. So he pulled over to the side and he said, "Hold on a second," to the kids. He opened up the hood of the car and just made some fixes and slammed the hood back down and went on their way. A little bit further down the way, smoke started coming out more. And then black smoke started coming out. He pulled over to the side quickly and he told the boys to get out of the car and run for your lives. And so they got out of the car. They ran for their lives. And the van went up in flames. And no one was hurt. But everything they had with them was burnt from the tefillin down to their socks. So this was in the news, in the Jewish news outlets a few years ago. I actually mentioned this once, and I spoke in a camp a few years ago, and one of the girls there said her brother was on that van. So, fine. They got a new van, and they bought new tefillin and clothing. They went to Camp Cayley. And then it took a couple days for the boys to overcome. It was pretty scary. 12, 13-year-old boys. And they all slowly, were comfortable to stay in camp, but there was one boy who wanted to go home, back to Cleveland. So a good friend of mine, the director of camp, Rabbi Eli Brazil, said, "Before you go back, I just want you to speak to one Rebbe before you go." And his name is Rabbi Benji Renov. He's a Rebbe in Halb, lower school. I'm friendly with him, but his older brother is a very close friend of mine. That's why I know the story. And what happened was, so Rabbi Renov took this boy out to Walmart to just, you know, break the ice, buy him something, and just schmooze a little bit. So they're sitting on the bench, Rabbi Renov and this young boy. And Rabbi Renov says, you know, he reviewed what happened, and I know this is very scary and hard, but Baruch Hashem, you're fine. All the boys are fine. Okay, you lost your tefillin. I know it was special, sentimental. You lost your other items. But everything's replaceable. So why are you so upset? Why do you want to go back home? And so the boy says, he looks down and says, this was all my fault. I'm the one who said tefillas aderech. And without a blink of an eye, Rabbi Renov says, are you kidding me? Imagine what would have happened had you not said tefillas aderech. You saved the day. You were the hero. Because you said tefillas aderech, no one got hurt. That's the godless of a Rebbe. That's the godless of a parent. Take every situation, every scenario to show how great a person is. So if you're passionate about making people great in this world, then you should be mechanech. But you're all going to be mechanech in one way or another when you're parents. The goal is to bring the greatness, the godless, out of each child, because there's a hidden treasure beneath. Mir Tashem, we should be zocha to follow the paths of the great tzaddikim we had, Rav Ari Levine and others, and really finding the true greatness in every single yid. Okay.